Talk show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let's go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. How you doing today? Good to be with you. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, and thanks for being around for the next couple of hours. I hope you are. Don't know where we're going to go with the show today. I do want to remind everybody that we are going to have noted attorney Michael Ratner with us a little bit later. We're going to talk about possibly prosecuting Mr. Bush and some of his people for war crimes, actually for torture. And Michael's serious about it. He's one of the foremost attorneys in the United States. He'll be joining us from New York in the second hour. So we have that to look forward to. If you are interested in prosecuting Mr. Bush and his cronies for what they've done in, along the lines of torture, why, I think they personally, I think they could be prosecuted for a whole host of things. And a lot of people are saying, well, that's in the past, let's move on. Especially a lot of Democratic leaders are saying, that's in the past, let's move on, it's in the past, you know. Yeah, it's in the past. But we have to look to the future. And in looking at the past, we can decide right here and now, in this day and age, that we don't want any more of what went on during the last 8 years with Mr. Bush to happen in the future. So it's not looking back, it's looking forward, and I wish everybody would look at it that way. I do wish they would look at it that way, because that's exactly what it is. We have to make examples of some people. Isn't that what the law's about? You stop people from doing things that you know aren't right. And you put a penalty out there. And if people do it, they suffer the penalty. Otherwise, you know, murder. If murder wasn't against the law, people would be, there'd be a lot more killing going on. If bank robbery wasn't against the law, every Tom, Dick, and Harry'd have himself a gun out sticking up the bank every day. So there has to be deterrence. And if you ignore the deterrence, if you ignore the laws that are in place, most especially within leadership, with people like Bush and Nixon and folks like that, if you ignore the laws there, then it's going to come back to haunt you over and over and over again. So, Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois, if they don't do anything to him, he will keep right on keeping on. You know he will. You know he will. So, let's just do remember that. That's the way it's going to be. I don't know why anybody is in favor of giving some of these people a break. They're talking about giving Ted Stevens a break because of his age. No. No, he willingly broke the law. He knew what he was doing. He talked about it with his co-conspirator. And really thought he would never get caught. Really thought he was high enough in office that nobody would bother him. No. No. When it happens, especially in leadership positions, then too bad. You pay the price. I've often said, if some Joe Schmo does the same thing, he's going to prison. You know that, because he doesn't have enough money, enough high-powered attorneys to buy his way out of trouble. But I've always said, and I think people think I say it in jest, I do not. Where leadership is concerned, I think at the state capitol buildings or at the capital of the United States up on Capitol Hill, there ought to be a gallows outside. I mean this. I do. I'm actually against the death penalty in most cases, but I think that when a leader, an elected leader, appointed leader, betrays the public trust like some of these people have, then they ought to make use of that gallows and let everybody inside in a leadership position know that if they betray the public trust, that's one of the worst things they could possibly do. And there will be consequences. And I do mean that. I really do. I would hate to think, and I don't want to speculate too much on it, but when we look at this Illinois situation with Governor Blagojevich, I have to wonder how many people in governor's offices and leadership positions in the Congress of the United States. I have to wonder how many people there are out there now who are guilty, guilty as hell, of doing the same things that this man has done. And it appears that Chicago, and it appears that Illinois, perhaps, has some sort of a corner on the market. Wow, four governors in modern history been convicted. So we know it's a way of life, and we have known for some time that it's a way of life in Chicago politics. Already people are starting to throw this at Barack Obama. I do hope there's nothing at all there. It appears that there's nothing at all there, any kind of consorting with this man or dealing with this man, and it appears that that is the case, and I have full confidence that that is the case. Until proven otherwise. So, it's going to be an ugly mess. Ugly, ugly mess before it's over with. They're going to use this to beat Barack Obama over the head. And you know the story. You know the story. I had quite an afternoon today for about 45 minutes. Fortunately, I'm in a studio that is equipped to where I can make phone calls and go about my work while I'm on hold. Just put on the headphones and dial up one of the numbers here and put it over the speaker in the studio, the monitors. And so I don't lose a lot of time when I'm on the phone to somebody. But you know how it is today when you're talking to these corporations on the phone. And it's getting the best of me. And I'm to the point where I cut off my nose to spite my face, I suppose, that I'm getting down to the point where I'm not going to be able to fly in a commercial airline anymore because I've cut ties with several of the airlines that I wouldn't fly on them anymore. I suppose it's going to get to the point where I'll have to once again. But I had this long, drawn-out, and I timed it today. I usually do when I'm on the phone with a corporation, and a lot of you saying, well, Guy, why are you telling me all about this? I just want you to know, and if you've got a similar story, I want to hear about it. I was on the phone with Delta Airlines today. You know good old Delta. bankruptcy, out of bankruptcy, all that. Did you ever try and redeem any Sky Miles? Did you ever try and do that? Maybe you've had more luck than I have, but I've had very little luck with any of the airlines on Sky Miles. Oh, yes, 8 months from now on a Thursday night at 2 a.m., there might be one seat available that you can use your Sky Miles on, or else they double it up. Normally, if you need 35,000, they'll say, well, if you want to get your choice on a certain flight, it's going to be 70,000. And they've got it. It's like a casino. I mean, the odds are stacked in their favor. So I have a few Sky Miles and some of these Sky Miles Club and Delta, and I've got two different little accounts with Delta. And I decide, well, I don't have enough to redeem them for anything at all. It's kind of leftover miles, you know. And they got a place on there where you could go in and order magazines. I thought, well, that's a good thing to do. I don't buy magazines anymore, subscriptions to magazines, because they're somewhat costly. So I'll trade in these Sky Miles for some magazines. So I get on the site, put in my Delta Sky Miles number and my PIN number, and I get to the point and I pick out these magazines that I want and log them in and submit the order, and it comes back, you don't have enough miles to get these magazines. Well, I know I do, because it says so right there on my account. So I do the whole thing over again, thinking that maybe I might have made a mistake, and comes back and said, we're sorry, you don't have enough miles to get these magazines. Call customer service. So I call customer service, and customer service, yes, indeed, you do have enough miles to buy those magazines. I said, well, fine, then order them for me. Well, we can't do that. All we can do is affirm that you do have a sufficient number of Sky Miles to buy the magazines, but we may not order them for you. You will have to go back to the site and order them. We don't know what happened. Perhaps there was a glitch. So I go back and try once again, and of course it comes back and says, you can't order these because you don't have enough miles. So I call customer service again, and they transfer me to one person and into another person. And finally they discover that they have problems with their site today. And so I said, rather than have me go through this for another hour, why don't you just order these magazines for me? Well, I'm sorry, sir, we can't do that. We don't have time to do that. Well, I don't really have time to be on the phone with you for an hour and 9 minutes. Please just order them for me. Do it manually, whatever you have to do. No, no, we're sorry, we can't do that. So I just wanted to let everybody know that if you want to order magazines off of Delta for your pitiful little number of Sky Miles that you have left over at the end of the year before they expire at the end of December, you're in for some fun. Yes, you are. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us on the program here today. 866-546-5254. And no, Corey Stone, they don't have the nation on the list, or I would have gotten that one. Yes. Nobody I like much more than, a whole lot more than Katrina Vandehoof. We've met with her a couple of times in Washington, and Katrina always, well, they run a great outfit there at the nation. They do. I see that just a couple of hours ago that it has come to light that, candidate number 5 that was talking to Governor Blagojevich of Illinois is indeed, they say, Jesse Jackson Jr. Now, I had heard people, he's the one that's implicated the most, candidate number 5 on these phone calls, on these tapped phone lines. Blagojevich is heard on there saying that one of them offered him, what was it, $500,000? And I heard pundits last night on TV saying, well, it can't be Jesse Jr. because he doesn't have access to that kind of money. Turns out that is who they think it is. So, the wonderful world of Chicago politics goes on. They think maybe it's Jesse Jackson Jr. If that is Jesse Jackson Jr., oh my God, I wouldn't want to be found to have been offering $500,000 for a Senate seat. Would you? No, I would not. Ouch. That's going to be ugly. I do want to remind everybody once again, whether or not it matters a whole lot, I may have to go do jury duty tomorrow once again. I think I might have mentioned the other day I've been picked for jury duty once again and have to go do my duty. And it could be that I'm back with you live tomorrow, because if you call the court at after 5 o'clock Eastern, they will tell you whether or not the case you've been assigned will be canceled, will in fact be heard tomorrow. So I don't know as of this moment whether or not I'm going to have to go bright and early in the morning or not. So I'll find out after 5, and we'll try and let you know somehow. I thought it appropriate to give you a report, an update, if you will, on the success of my fund drive that I started yesterday. You ready for the totals? I said some of my right-wing friends would use this to beat me over the head, and guess what? They started already. Last night I had a couple of emails from a couple of them saying, oh, poor guy, you know, tongue firmly in cheek, you have to beg for nickels and dimes to keep your pitiful little show going. And that's what the email said from Jake. Thank you, Jake. Thank you for caring enough to send an email. So I do want to give you a report. Since I mentioned yesterday, I told everybody that should we not be able to raise enough funds to keep the program going, that we will have to end this six-year venture at the end of January. And once again, it pains me more than I can tell you to say that to you, but I can no longer bear the cost of doing it nearly by myself. There are a few that help, and I'm forever grateful to those of you, and you know who you are. And I won't identify you. Maybe some of you would want me to give your names or not. And I perhaps will do that in a group. I don't want to single anybody out. But it's a small group. It's a small group. But anyway, the grand total in fundraising since I talked to you yesterday is minus $12.50. Now, Jake, if you want to write me another email tonight, I think you'll probably have a good hee-haw over that one. Yes, we actually had a couple of cancellations, so of subscriptions. So I wonder, and one person donated. So that's the update. It's minus $12.50. So that's not really great progress in the first day. Was it something I said? I don't know. Could have been. I am always hesitant to talk about that issue, because, frankly, it is it troubles me, and it's embarrassing, actually, to have to ask for funds to run a meager program like this. But such is the case, and we told everybody the truth and the straight skinny on it yesterday, and so we ended up with minus $12.50. So I don't know if we can keep that pace up for very long. No, in fact, we couldn't keep that pace up doing minus $12.50 every day. We wouldn't be able to keep that up for very long at all. So enough said about that. And just do want to let everybody know that I was serious, that we definitely have plans at the end of January to shut it down, because we will have to. We won't have any choice. 866-546-5254. And it's particularly galling to me when we have a difficult time. And, oh, I know, I can hear you right-wingers right now. Well, if you had a good enough show, you wouldn't have to do that. Well, when it's dominated by right-wingers, when it's totally dominated, when every local station here that has talk on has nothing but right-wing, you have virtually no chance. We were on terrestrial radio in this area on three different stations, and every one of them horrendous phone calls to the stations that they would share their airways with somebody with a left-leaning point of view, and we're pressured into getting us off the air here locally. So it's very difficult for somebody on the left, and many have tried. There haven't been a whole lot of people get on any longer than 6 years. In fact, if you know of anybody, I can think of maybe Tom, Mike, Randy Rhodes, I suppose. If you know anybody that's been around longer than 6 years, let me know. I'd like to hear about them. Anyway, it's particularly galling to try and do what we do and know that there are some jerks and people I consider to be real jerks on the air making hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. And I wonder if you heard this little love fest between Chris Wallace and right-wing hate radio and occasional Fox TV guest Mike Gallagher. Now, you talk about something that makes you want to throw up. Here these two guys are bragging about who's the most right-wing and who has done the most to defend Mr. Bush and go to the Cheney Christmas party at the Naval Observatory. I thought I would gag when I heard this, so I thought I'd make my audience gag along with me.
If you really were nice, you just wouldn't have mentioned it. You would have said, Chris, the big news this week is what you did at the Frost-Nixon screening. And let's get to that right now.
You're a petty little man. You're a little man. By the way, I didn't see you last night at the Naval Observatory. I was at the Vice President's...
I was there last night.
Oh, I was too. What time did you get there?
Because I anchored Special Report, I didn't get there till about 7:45.
Yeah, because I'm on TV, I get to anchor Special Report, I'm a TV person. I mean, we know who you are, we get it, we get who you are, we know you sit in the
box. By the way, do we need to talk about Laura Ingraham again?
It was a great party, wasn't it?
Yeah. You were there, really?
It was a nice party, although I was surprised.
Know?
I got there early because I had to get on a plane and all that, it was kind of comfortable.
But
now I'm in New York City.
Oh.
I took the shuttle back to New York last night, and then I go to Dallas.
Well,
it's just very complicated to be me. But I'll tell you something. What a nice party.
Did the Vice President say to you, thank you so much for defending the President, and yes, I'm going to be giving you a special exit interview in a couple of weeks?
Did he say all that to you?
Yes.
Think about that. You stand up as a citizen, and you say, you know what? Whatever Bush has done, he's done in the service of his country, and somebody boos that. Can you imagine booing that?
Well, and here's the interesting thing. So I was at the Cheney party last night.
Yes,
And a bunch of people. Cheney was genuinely grateful for what I had done. And Ed Gillespie, the senior counselor to the president, was there.
Did you see Carl
genuinely
Rowe?
Grateful.
Did you see Carl Rowe?
I saw Carl Rowe.
I hung out with Carl a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Carl.
I'll explain to him today who you were.
Big fan. Big fan.
You of him or him of you?
Yeah, both.
May I finish my story?
Yes, go ahead.
So in any case, and they were all doing this, and I turned to Lorraine and my wife, and I said, what has it come to in this country that people in the White House are sitting there grateful because some yo-yo television person, me, has sat there and said the president is not a crook? What has it come to that's like an act of bravery in the city?
I know. I mean, it's astounding that and I thought
about it. I don't think it was a big deal what I did, but in this current climate, it kind of is.
Gee, were you at the vice president's Christmas party last night? I was. Oh, were you really? Oh, and he was so grateful for what I did to defend him and the Bush administration. Oh, really? Well, did he tell you that he was going to get give you an interview? I mean, here these two jerks are arguing back and forth on who's the craziest right-winger between the two. We've got Chris Wallace groveling in the mud for Bush and Cheney. He's been a cheerleader all along for over 4,000 American troops being killed for no reason at all. He should be so proud. I'll bet his dad, Mike Wallace, heard this and probably threw up. I would if my son said something so utterly disgusting and vile. It was like those two were having a contest to see who could kiss Cheney's ass the most. Cheney must have loved it. Two guys on national radio comparing who had the best brown lipstick on last night. Oh, I was disgusted by that. I really was. And this is the same Mike Gallagher. He isn't on as many stations as your Rush Limbaugh and your Sean Hannity's. And and people like that. But he's on locally here. And I've told the story before, but let me tell it again. I was out at Crawford, Texas one time several years ago. Must have been, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago. I can't remember exactly, maybe five. And was covering the protest that Cindy Sheehan was having on Prairie Chapel Road and at the Peace House there in Crawford. Out near the Bush Ranch, you wind your way out of Crawford, the big metropolis of Crawford. They have a flashing red light. They don't have an actual red light, but they have a flashing caution light there. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I go out to the Prairie Chapel Road, drive out there, and there's a whole lot of people out there. They're having to be in the ditch because the local sheriff didn't want them to be on the road anyplace. So they had their signs and their chairs, and they were camped out. And Cindy had the crosses set up for, at the time, I think, right around 2,000 dead soldiers. And up pulls a bus with Mike Gallagher and his, and the only thing I can call him, I guess, would be fans. Up pulls this bus. And Gallagher gets out with a bullhorn. This, now, mind you, this is a peaceful deal going on out here. There are probably, 100 people altogether. And cars parked off the side of the road. Couldn't go on down the road because the Secret Service wouldn't let you be headed blocked off toward Bush's ranch. And this was kind of at a fork in the road with a little island there in the middle. And it was very peaceful, and people were standing around talking. I was interviewing Cindy and chatting with Cindy and some of her friends and some of our other friends that have remained cyber friends ever since. Gallagher gets off this bus, this man who calls himself a wonderful Christian, this man who is stepfather to two sons, so proud that he talks about him. Of course, they're not in the service of the country. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but he's been a warmonger ever since this thing started. He gets off the bus with his bullhorn, and this thing was silent. There weren't, other than casual conversations going, there was no noise, there was nobody chanting, hell no, we won't go, or whatever. There was nothing, just quiet conversations taking place. And here's this idiot, gets off the bus with a bullhorn and starts yelling at the people that were there. This Mike Gallagher. And he went off like the nutcase that he is. He's got the looks of a possum, his face. If you can imagine what a possum looks like. Am I supposed to say opossum? I don't know. I'm a country boy, and we always just called him possum. But that's what his facial features like. Mike Gallagher looks like a possum. It's exactly what he looks like. And he starts in with this bullhorn screaming at people how they're all anti-American and we should be ashamed and on and on and on. And then the people on his bus, they get out and they start chanting across the road and calling people commie pinko, anti-American, un-American, and all the things that you've heard the right-wingers do. Now, this was a thoroughly disgusting display by Gallagher and his group. And eventually, they got back on their bus and left. He flew clear to Crawford, Texas to do that. Must have made a buck out of it somehow. I can't believe he would have done that. And so I called him, and of course I couldn't get through to him, so I emailed him and told him what I thought of his experience there. And we sent a couple of highly charged emails back and forth. And finally he said this was, he's going to give me his final response to what I was saying, that no, he would not come on my show and defend his actions. He doesn't have to defend his honorable actions for going out there and making that disgusting display. And he ended the argument, he said, by saying, if you think that, to make a long story short, his challenge to me was, I'll compare my paycheck to yours. I still have that email, because I was frankly astonished that anybody that had a national radio show would resort to saying, to trying to end an argument by saying, I'll challenge you to compare your paycheck to mine. Well, I know he makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, if not a couple of mil. I don't know. Quite a bit, I would say. My paycheck for this show, exactly zero, then and now, and always. So, that's the Mike Gallagher. That's the upstanding Mike Gallagher that we talk about, that goes on the air and likes to let everybody know he's such a good Christian. You see him on Fox News once in a while, and you will know him when you see him on Fox TV. He most definitely does not have a face for TV. And as I mentioned, few people who look like a possum do have a face for TV, but you'll understand what I'm talking about when you see him. You really will. And I don't often make fun of somebody's looks, but this guy is a rat, just a disgusting rat. He really is. And so I couldn't pass this up today. Maybe I sound really vindictive or something about it. I don't mean to be. It's just that he is such a nasty, nasty piece of work. I mentioned to you that I'm going to go to the inauguration on January the 20th. I'm going to go the 18th, it is, and do the show there Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I've also mentioned to you, I think that they want to have the bars open all night in Washington, D.C. to accommodate the people that are going to be there. I have no idea, other than helping out the local bars and liquor establishments, no idea why they would want to keep the bars open until 5 a.m. in Washington, D.C. that can only lead to trouble. There's only one thing that can lead. Yes, maybe two things. More cash in the cash registers and trouble. Drunken driving arrest, disorderly conduct arrest, public drunkenness arrest, disorderly conduct, all that. That's the only thing it can lead to. And I see Dianne Feinstein and Bob Bennett are complaining about it. And they're trying to see that they get the bars closed down before that. I don't know if they'll have any luck doing that or not. But there goes the fun for a lot of folks. You ever go to a bar till 5 a.m.? I never have. I was in Oklahoma City one time, and I think there are probably other places. I must be a real rube. Many, many years ago, going to an Ohio State football game, stayed overnight in Oklahoma City before heading on down to Norman. And the bars there were open till 4. I found that a bit unusual because I'm from a state originally from Ohio where the bars close at 2:30. I often wondered about that. If the girls all look better at closing time, and that's 2:30 in Ohio, what must they look like by 4? I don't know. Only you wouldn't hear a lot of guys ask that question, I suppose. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. Here's the Media Matters Minute for the day.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, Fox News' Sean Hannity suggested there was a double standard in the Justice Department's prosecution of Republican Senator Ted Stevens and Democratic Congressman William Jefferson.
Now, if you're a Republican like Ted Stevens, even though the case against you is a lot more murky, you know, justice moves at lightning speed. Not only do you get indicted, you get tried, you get convicted in record time, but the Justice Department moves so fast, it's like some kind of national emergency. Liberals can get away with whatever they need to get away with for political expediency.
Hannity left out a key difference between the two cases. Stevens reportedly requested a speedy trial in an attempt to clear his name before Election Day. But the most outrageous comment of the day goes to talk radio host Rick Roberts.
You may as well start an Obama savings account right now so that that welfare mom can have her new plasma TV as she pops kids out like a Pez dispenser. Since when did having kids become a cash crop?
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Welcome. If you'd like to join us on the program with your 2 cents worth, maybe three or four, I don't know, give us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Always glad to hear from you. It turns out that Governor Blagojevich may not be the only one in trouble right now in the government. Of course, we've still got this senatorial race going on in Minnesota with Al Franken and Norm Coleman. And we do know that Norm Coleman is being investigated by the FBI as well with his connections to this foreign business benefactor. They're looking into these allegations that a longtime friend and benefactor tried to steer money to Senator Coleman, through his wife, via his wife's Minneapolis employer. His name is Kazmini. Anyway, he tried to get money directly to the senator that way, and both Coleman and Kazmini have denied any wrongdoing. And Coleman said he welcomes an investigation. Well, don't they all say that? Didn't Ted Stevens say that, too? Didn't Duke Cunningham? Yeah! I welcome an investigation. And didn't that idiot, Blagojevich, say, yeah, well, go ahead and look all you want to. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they always say that. In fact, when they say that, they welcome an investigation. I guess you can just stamp guilty on it the way it looks. But Coleman has not been contacted by the FBI, said his spokesman, and said they haven't been contacted by any law enforcement or investigative authority on the matter. But aren't you sick of it? Aren't you just sick of it? I mean, we've got a guy I've always loved in the House, Charlie Rangel. God, Look at the mess Charlie Rangel's involved in right now. I don't know if it's going to come down to any actual criminality, but ethically, looks really bad. Looks really bad. And, of course, thank God. And I'm sorry it was a Republican, this Kao or whatever his name is down in New Orleans, defeated finally. They figured that William Jefferson, you know, the congressman with the $90,000 wrapped in tinfoil in his refrigerator, how desperate he was to get there during Katrina. Had to get to his house. Actually commandeered a boat and had the cops take him to his house. Yeah. There are too many people like that in the House. I mean, and whatever happens usually. I guess Cunningham and what's his name from Ohio? Why can I never remember his name? Trafficante. He calls himself Trafficant because he didn't want to be linked with the real name of the family, Trafficante. And you know where that name leads, right? We're just filled with people like that in the House and the Senate. And I know I don't want to tar and feather everybody that's there, but it's just getting to be so damn ugly. So ugly. We deserve better. We really do. But it's our fault. We take it, and people elect people like that back to Congress again. I mean, think about that. William Jefferson almost made it back to Congress. He just barely got beat. It's taken this long to sort out that election in New Orleans. So he nearly made it back to office. And look at Coleman. He's being investigated. The people there know it. And he's in a dogfight, but he may well win that Senate seat back again. Many times people have sent people like that back to Washington knowing of their misdeeds. I will never understand that. Let me just say it. I had an issue with John Glenn. I'm from Ohio. I thought the world and all of John Glenn. But when he got caught up in the Keating mess, that's it. That was it. He was censured for that. That's enough for me. As highly as I thought, he was a hero and all that. And I, you know, John Glenn was just it for me. And when I found out he was involved in the Keating Five, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here. He's not dead. But as much as I thought of him, and I thought a lot of him, and I campaigned for him, when I found out he was involved in the Keating Five, that was it for me. That's it. You just don't fool around with the public trust. You just don't. And far too much of it is going on. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is this the Magnificent Guy James Show down in Florida?
Well, I don't know about magnificent. I would be, I'm loath to say magnificent. Maybe exceptionally great, something like that.
Exceptionally great would work fine. That would work. Good.
That's just not me.
This, of course, is Eric from Vermont.
I know, Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
How are things in Vermont? Is it cold and snowy?
Well, we had some cold days. Monday was -8. Today it got up to 50. We have rain. It's going to get into road conditions very, very intolerable and very dangerous.
Yikes.
But otherwise, we survive up here for some reason. We did go 67% for Barack in the state.
Yeah, man.
And listen, I'm calling. I'm sure you've seen the chat room. But I think a lot of your listeners don't realize how much dedication that you have given and personal sacrifice in terms of your time and in terms of your own personal finances towards staying online and helping the American citizenry become more informed about truthfulness with reference sources, the great guests that you've had over the what you've called 6 years on your show. And I'm here to try to support that a little bit and make them a little more aware of a lot of things that happened over those years. For example, there was a time when you were on air and you were getting hit by all kinds of money problems because you couldn't get enough support. And I wouldn't say this online. I wouldn't say this on a phone otherwise. And then there are people like me that have some extra funds, and I shot some extra money to you at one particular time when I could afford to do so. And if anybody can do something like that, that would be a wonderful thing. There were times when you were actually on Saturday afternoon on Democratic Underground, and you had a whole afternoon string of comments, and there were many, many wonderful people that were there, some with us, some no longer are with us anymore, and I think about those people.
Do you remember Jeff?
Pardon me?
Remember Jeff from New York?
Jeff Madsen?
Yes.
Yep. MJ, whatever. Yeah, I remember Jeff. And there were some really wonderful people, but I mean, your tenure over this period has not to be something that you should feel embarrassed about. It is something that the listeners should be supporting. And I know that the efforts that you've had to try to seek funds from various entities have been very aggressive on your part, and I'm so sorry that you have not been able to conjure the support of people that really do need to hear the honest voice of the magnificent Guy James.
Well, Eric, I really appreciate your thoughts on that. I do. You've been one of the loyal listeners and supporters of the program for a very, very long time, actually almost from the beginning, I think. And, you reminded me something that I've forgotten about when we used to do the threads on Democratic Underground during the show, and we'd run a big old thread on there during the program and have a lot of people involved and all, and you're right, some of the people aren't there anymore. I seldom make it over there anymore. Things have kind of changed there, I think, a bit. Maybe it's a different crowd now, by and large, but a huge website, and they were just Smirking Chimp and some of the other websites of it. And I'm really taxing my memory now, and I don't want to get into anybody's personal business, but didn't we meet you on the show or on the website through somebody named VetWife?
That would be correct.
Yes, okay.
And basically during that time period, there was a big storm because that individual had gone on to another site, and there was a big fiasco with 37, 38 number of threads going on with DU at that time. I got very irritated with DU at that time and pretty much called out Skinner on things that I knew about him. And that's not really stuff I probably should be talking on the phone. I mean, there are a lot of good things. I still lurk quite a bit on DU. I can get a lot of information on there. But it has diminished considerably over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of people betting. Some of these people don't even bet the articles, but still the site maintains 133,000 membership and so on and so forth. I'm not on here to knock DU. They still do some really great work. Don't get me wrong. But I do feel that during that period of time that you had been extremely dissed because of whatever happened on one particular couple of days during that. But the important part is that I think it's really important for the new listeners to say, well, fine, let's go on and let's do it and let's get together and go forward and reference facts. And that's always been the reason why I've enjoyed your dialogue and your interview technique and whatever. And, I mean, it's a matter of supporting the truth. I mean, if you look for the truth, sometimes it's not an awkward thing. Sometimes it is an awkward thing, but you have to be looking for the truth, and if you don't have people that want to support looking for the truth, there are many, many avenues that you can go to find the truth. Unfortunately, if you look at the little TV tube, you don't find the truth. You don't find the idea that the mainstream media is sitting there jacking up $74 an hour for the auto workers union. I mean, these people are not paid that much, but on a show like yours, that gets exposed because you open it up and you take calls from people. And I used to hear you so many more times than current, listening to right-wing bloggers or right-wing callers that wanted to sort of gotcha kind of thing. And that's not even happening anymore. I'm sure you don't even get that many calls from those people anymore. I mean, I know
no.
from, and it's sad. But I really think for all the listeners, get on the Guy James, get on the head-on chat room, and get supporting some truth. Support Guy James, because Guy James is a really important element of a big part of truth that we need to acknowledge in this country and go on forward and make it a better, more great democratic republic in this country.
Eric.
And I just want to let people know that they need to support people. And then it's very much like public broadcasting, radio, whether television or whatever. If people don't support somebody like you, rather than the corporate people that fund Rush Limbaugh for $40 million a year plus, or any of the other right-wing hacks, then the truth is not going to get out because they don't substantiate any of the references that they're talking about. They're basically talking out of their mouth. Nobody questions them. It's called propaganda. It's called Goebbels. It's called German. It's called 1930s, whatever.
Yeah, I've got a piece of that type of audio to play in a little while where I was astonished, and it's Sean Hannity. I'm astonished at some of the things these guys say, and people just go, yeah, oh, yeah, that must be true because he said it. So far, and it wasn't like he made a mistake. He intends, and when they do this, they intend to put out misinformation, and it works. It does work.
Anyway, Guy, all I really have to do is say is you've been around the block a few times at least, I know, and I think it's important for your listenership to say that you're not a new kid on the block. You've been around. And it's really important to support your show. And to support your show, they need to understand that you don't get outside funding from corporations or any other major contributors that were going to propagandize a $40 billion paycheck for you.
Hey.
And it's really important for people to know that they really have to, you know, $5 a month. You know, anything that they can get out of their pocketbook from time to time. I mean, this week maybe they got $2 that they were going to buy a, you know, whatever silly little thing. But, you know, to get it out and support you. And I really sincerely hope you can stay online at least. Love to have you on open air. But I'm not in a position where I was several years ago to be able to.
Very few of us are.
As much as I could. I wish I could.
Very few of us are. Things are going south for a lot of us, that's for sure. Eric,
well,
thanks so much for your kind thoughts, and thanks so much for your support of the program. It's always appreciated. I think you know that. And it's been a special relationship over the years, a long time. And we remember some of the same things that said and all on DU and the old times there and the old gang on there and all. And I appreciate your comments. I really do. And I appreciate your thoughts.
Well, you keep up the good work, and hopefully we'll get some people to donate and keep you going.
Thanks, Eric.
Yes, sir.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Here's an example of what Eric was talking about. Here's an example of out-and-out malicious, intentional propaganda. Not a mistake, not a slip of the tongue, not a misspeak, none of that. This is an out-and-out huge lie. Huge lie. by one Mr. Sean Hannity. If anybody wants to challenge me on this, whether or not this is a huge lie, please call us at 866-546-5254. But this is what you get on Right Wing Radio every single day.
Dick, if we anywhere we look in the world, whenever you have government-controlled economic systems, yeah. you have economic stagnation and you have Absolutely. Poverty. Is Absolutely. That what America's headed towards?
We're headed toward that, but before we get there, we're going to have massive, unbelievable inflation because basically they're just printing this money. And any semblance of fiscal discipline has completely gone out the window. Yeah. Not under Obama's presidency, under Bush's and a Republican Congress.
Well, but,
or Democratic, but
well,
Republicans
I,
in it. And so that we're headed for
we
massive
had,
inflation.
We had a good 6.5 years with the economy. Let's be honest. He inherited a recession, meaning President
right.
Bush. He inherited a recession. He had the negative impact on the economy on 9/11. We created 10 million new jobs, lower unemployment than in the last four decades average. We had a lot of good years. There is an ebb and flow to the economy.
Mr. Sean Hannity there with his little thug, Dick Morris, who said something he disagreed with. Morris was telling the truth about how this administration has screwed up so badly, and Hannity has to jump in there and say, we had it pretty good for 6 years. Now, I'm not going to argue with him about that because numbers, liars figure and figures lie and all that, okay? If he thinks it was good for 6.5 years, let him think that. Let him just go ahead and think that. But when he says that they've created 6 or 10 million jobs, there is nowhere you can go with any government figures at all that will state that Mr. Bush has created 10 million jobs during his administration. It did not happen. It just didn't happen. And here's Sean Hannity talking to I don't know how many million people on the Hannity and Combs show. I did hear his bitch Combs in the background saying, no, he didn't, no, he didn't. I did hear that on there. But it fascinates me that he would have the cojones to get on there and say that. He knows that's not true. Everybody knows that's not true. Well, not everybody, because some of his idiot listeners don't know any better. And so he gets on there and says that, and you can bet that that number is being parroted all over this country today by right-wing idiots, the same kind of that, what, 22 or 24% that still support George W. Bush, are mouthing those words today. He created 10 million jobs. He inherited a recession. Mm-hmm. It's funny how they forestalled talking about a recession here lately in the last year or so for so long, for so very long, because it just didn't meet the exact criteria for a recession, they said. But they call what was going on when he came into office after the Clinton administration, said, well, that was a recession. No, it wasn't. That didn't meet the criteria at all. But here's a man out and out propagandizing the American people, making millions of dollars a year on national TV with his little thug Dick Morris there by his side, who usually is his little toady who goes along, and Morris says something that's a little bit out of line with the right-wing talking points, and old Hannity jumps in there and said, I've got a Herman Hannity. He's got to get in there with his little bit of propaganda. Wow. Hey, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. United Electrical workers met in Chicago Tuesday with company and bank officials in an effort to resolve the worker sit-down strike at Republic Windows and Doors. As of late Tuesday afternoon, no agreement had been reached to end that sit-down. Bank of America says it's willing to extend limited credit to Republic to help resolve the sit-down, but no money has been released yet to pay the workers the roughly $1.5 million in vacation pay, severance, and wages they are owed. 200 workers occupied their factory in response to an illegal plant shutdown. UE organizer Leah Fried says that workers in America are tired of being screwed by banks, corporations, and government. The workers are vowing to keep occupying that factory until they get the money they're owed.
The fight that these workers have taken on is really a fight for all working people, all people who struggle every day to make ends meet and are getting screwed over by their bosses and are getting screwed over by the banks and where the government is failing us.
As auto workers wait for Congress to approve emergency loans to their industry, caravans of auto workers traveled to Washington this week to drive home a point that union auto workers are not overpaid and did not bring the auto industry to the brink of bankruptcy. In addition to the emergency loans, the auto workers told Congress that a national industrial policy and health care reform are needed to strengthen the U.S. auto industry. The federal corruption indictment of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich says the governor wanted the SEIU to get him a lucrative job heading the Change to Win Labor Federation as a payoff for appointing a U.S. senator who would advance the union's political agenda. The indictment says the governor spoke with an SEIU official about the Senate seat. SEIU issued a statement Tuesday that says the union has no reason to believe that SEIU or any SEIU official was involved in any wrongdoing. SEIU said, quote, "In keeping with the U.S. Attorney's request, we're not sharing information with the media at this time," end quote. Sony is the most recent company to announce mass layoffs, Jesse Russell reports.
It was announced on Tuesday that Sony plans to slash 8,000 jobs. The company will also close 5 to 6 manufacturing facilities, and most of the job cuts will come from that sector of the business. The 5% job reduction will be made across the company's global workforce. Sony is the world's second largest consumer electronics maker. It is uncommon for a consumer electronics company to make announcements of such cuts during the peak holiday season, and it serves to highlight the dire state of the economy as consumer spending continues to decline.
Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
On average, Americans worked 46 hours per week this year while playing only 16 hours per week. That's according to a recent poll from Harris Interactive. Leisure time dived by 20% since the same time in 2007. In that year, Americans would have 20 hours per week for play. 35 years ago, when Harris Interactive first began tracking work versus leisure time, Americans worked on average 41 hours and played 26.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. This is the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour today. I do want to remind you, coming up a little later on in the second hour, noted attorney Michael Ratner is going to be with us to talk about torture prosecutions by this Bush administration. It's a subject that needs to be addressed. As we mentioned earlier, a lot of people think Democratic leaders are saying, hey, that's in the past, let's move on. I do think we do need to move on. That's a fact. But let's move on and make sure that in the future we don't have any more messes like this to deal with. And speaking of torture, I'm hearing, and I'm sure some of you have heard this by now, but let's let everybody else know. One of the Bush administration's psychological torture techniques against the detainees has been to let them have it with loud music, keeping them from sleeping and causing some to actually knock their heads against the walls and the doors, screaming their heads off. And we found out some of the music now that they have been playing to really screw these guys' heads off. The song Dirty by Christine Aguilera, F Your God by Decide, Shoot to Thrill by AC/DC, We Are the Champions by Queen, I Love You from Barney and Friends, Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, Babylon by David Gray, White America by Eminem, and the Sesame Street theme song. And some of the others they've been playing is Aerosmith and Britney Spears and Don McLean and Little Kim and Limp Bizkit and Matchbox and Rage, Rage Against the Machine, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Tupac Shakur. Certainly, there are some on that group that would cause me to bang my head against the wall and scream. Certainly there's some on that list that would make me do that, without question. I've never been subjected to something like that. Have you? I did recently hear that a juvenile traffic court judge sentenced several kids, or I forget how many, for reckless driving and all, and their sentence was to have to sit in a room with Barry Manilow music playing real loud. And that's the truth. That really happened. So found that to be interesting. Say, how much money do you make in a day? How much money do you make in a year? Found it interesting to find out, actually, that the average major CEO in this country makes more in one day than the people that work for them make in the entire work year. That's right. Major CEOs, there are 260 work days in a year, if you get 2 days off every week, and a lot of people don't. But a major CEO of the majors make more money in one day than the average pay for his workers for the entire year. Have we gotten off the track somewhere or not? That's an insane statistic. Just absolutely insane. I don't know how it's gotten to be that way. I do know. Places like Walmart and the anti-union movement that's been going on in this country, that's how that has happened. That's one of the reasons it's happened. And, of course, they've allowed these thugs to take over as CEOs and get the board of directors eating out of their hands and vote themselves whatever they want for wages and benefits and golden parachutes and all that. You've heard the horror stories. And it's been companies like Walmart that have helped drive wages down for the average worker. And I mention Walmart as often as I can on this show. I do not step foot in a Walmart store. I will not. It would take a hell of a lot to get me to go in a Walmart store. And just in case you'd forgotten, this story out of Minneapolis, Walmart Stores Incorporated, the world's biggest retailer, agreed to pay $54.3 million to settle a Minnesota lawsuit over wages after a judge ruled the company broke state laws by requiring employees to work off the clock. How many times have we heard this from Walmart, forcing employees to work off the clock? We've heard stories of them locking people in at night, making them work off the clock, making them work through breaks, making them work through lunch periods. This settlement covers workers employed between September 11, 1998 and November 14, 2008 at Walmart and Sam's Club locations, the retailer said today in a statement. The agreement prevents the case. Now, here's the crux of the matter for Walmart. This agreement prevents the case from being presented to a jury, which would have been asked to order Walmart to pay as much as $2 billion, 40 times more than they got off to pay in here. The company required hourly employees to work off the clock during training and denied full rest or meal breaks in violation of state wage and hour laws. Hastings, Minnesota District Judge Robert King Jr. ruled July 1st. Following a non-jury trial, King said Walmart broke labor laws more than 2 million times and ordered the retailer to give employees $6.5 million in back pay for that incident. Walmart, of course, has aggressively, probably more aggressively than anyone else, fought unionization because unions tend to dislike it when you require workers to work with no pay. And while it's good to see this suit settled, and it's good to see the employees get compensated after a decade of stalling around by Walmart, it's disappointing to know it's being settled in one regard, because the jury could have cost the company $2 billion. And if they'd had to pay that kind of money, maybe they'd have been motivated to pay their workers and give them adequate breaks. Instead, Walmart's going to pay this ticket of $54 million and keep right on screwing people. That's the long and the short of the matter. That's what we're headed for in this country. If we keep allowing companies like that to just run roughshod over their employees, that's what we're headed for in this country if we allow the unions to be beaten down to nothing. Some statistics. Right now, a lot of people like numbers. I like numbers. There were 9.5 million unemployed workers in September of this year. That's up 25% since January and up 40% from March of 2007. Imagine that. And for everybody that says, well, just go out and find yourself another job. If you lose your job, you get laid off, just go find yourself another job. There were 2.9 unemployed workers for every job opening in the recent survey. That's up from 1.9 in January. 2.9, you might as well say three people looking for every one job opening. That leaves two out of three screwed. Median wages for full-time workers have fallen by 1.6% over the last year. Well, guess who that benefits? There were 265,968 home foreclosures in September 2008 alone. I believe in September we had nearly 3,000 of those right here in this county. That's 21% higher than last year at the same time. There were 765,558 foreclosures in the third quarter of this year. That is 71% higher than the third quarter of last year. 71%. And one stat that a lot of people overlook, which is very important, when they look at the unemployment and say, gee, they're only 6.7% or whatever it is exactly right now. That's not so bad. There are 17 million workers underemployed either too discouraged to look for work, unemployed, or working part-time but wanting full-time. That's a 31% increase from a year ago, and up 21% just since January. The annual trade deficit, as of August, was $711 billion. That's 5% of our national output. 5%. It was only 3.9 in 2007. An estimated $2 trillion in pension wealth has been lost in the past year and a half because of this financial crisis. And here's a staggering statistic as well. Business bankruptcy filings rose 67% in September from a year ago. 67%. But we only had a recession starting, what, last week, 2 weeks ago? Isn't that what they said? Yeah, sure. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
If you're thinking of shopping at Walmart this holiday season, there's a 70% chance the gifts you buy come from communist China. America's largest corporation stocks its shelves with products made in Chinese factories, while more and more American factories are forced to shut down. Behind those prices Walmart likes to brag about, countless American jobs lost overseas. In this race to the bottom, Walmart gets ahead and the middle class gets left behind. America can't afford it any longer.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't be misunderstood by what I don't let me be misunderstood either. I wasn't kidding about Walmart. As you know, there's a theme that Bob often talks about, and I'm in complete solidarity with him on this. And the coal industry in West Virginia and other places in this country have run roughshod over the people, and they've come out with a little Christmas deal. I haven't heard this yet. But they've got unlimited money almost to spend on propaganda. And so here's the coal companies, the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. There's no such thing. But here's their little Christmas propaganda message. Maybe we'll get it, maybe we won't.
Rossi the Coal Man is a jolly, happy soul. He's abundant here in America, and he helps our economy roll. Rossi the Coal Man's getting cleaner every day. He's affordable and adorable, and his workers keep their pay. There must have been some magic in clean coal technology, for when they looked for pollutants, there was nearly none to see. Oh, Rossi the Coal Man is a jolly, happy soul. He's abundant here in America, and he helps our economy roll. Thumpity thump thump, thumpity thump thump, look at Rossi go. Somebody thump, thump, somebody thump towards energy independence we go.
How's that for some propaganda? Huh? It doesn't get much better than that, does it? That's from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, the ACCCE. Ah, yes. So everybody go out and get yourself a ton of coal tonight. Okay? Okay. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program, we'd love to have you join in today. I see that AIG, that's a number, a company, a name that it's getting to be. Well, has anybody ever stolen so much money from the American public as AIG? How much money are they into us now for? About $150 billion. And now we're finding out that the, well, this is from CNN. Struggling insurance giant American International Group owes Wall Street firms $10 billion from trades that went sour, according to sources cited by the Wall Street Journal. AIG, which is now operating under government assistance, had not previously detailed these losses, which stemmed from speculative investments in mortgage and corporate debt assets, the journal wrote on Wednesday. And now that those investments have gone south, the company must pay off its investment partners. However, the journal reported that an AIG spokesman told the paper that AIG defines the trades not as speculative, but as credit protection instruments. The company also said the company believed it had already disclosed the exposure. The government's $150 billion rescue package doesn't cover these losses, which raises questions about how AIG will pay off the debts, according to the Wall Street Journal. Well, how do you think they're going to pay them off? How do you think? They're simply going to go to Paulson and ask him for the money to pay them off, and he will give it to them. Of course he will. Man, and you wonder how much more hasn't been brought out yet in this whole sorry scene in this bailout of Wall Street. It sickens me when I think about it. I was against it then. I'm against it now. It should have been done better if it's going to be done at all. If it's going to be done, it should have been done with a modicum of oversight, you would think. But it turns out this was really no different than Don Corleone, Paulson, sitting in the vault with $740 billion or whatever it was, and having them come to him, kiss his ring, and say, "Here, how much do you need, my son?" Well, we at AIG need 150. Here you are, and they hand him the cash. That's what this whole thing seems like it was. How on earth did the people in Congress get duped into allowing that kind of money being passed out at the sole discretion of Paulson? How did that happen? When I saw that, when they were talking about, "Oh my God, we've got to do something by Monday or the world's going to end." You remember that? And I won't deny that maybe something needed to be done. I'm not enough of an econ expert to know that. But when they were saying something had to be done by Monday, and they, once again, as they always do, when they rush Congress into something, like the war, for example, seems like some really bad decisions get made. And so they let this money go, borrowed it and printed it, and gave Paulson, hey, here you go, here's the dough, do what you need, make things better, and we'll talk to you later. That's pretty much what happened. And Paulson said, well, all right. All right. And he called all of his friends that night and said, hey, boys, I'm going to pony up here starting pretty soon. Get your Christmas list ready, and I'm going to be handing you a lot of cold cash. Dig deep. Dig deep. Find any bad stuff you got on your books at all and get it out there so that you can all get some of this. Because as you all know, I'm one of you. I'm one of you. And that's what happened. And if you think it is an incestuous little group, got a note here about executive IOUs. Banks getting U.S. capital injections, and thanks Sophie for this. Banks getting U.S. capital injections face executive pay limits, but owe executives substantial debts for past service. See, now here's some money that they can't do anything about. Because these gentlemen are owed this money. Goldman Sachs, they got a capital injection of $10 billion. They owe their executives $11.8 billion. That's deferred pay. J.P. Morgan Chase got a capital injection of $25 billion. The estimated debt to their executive, $8.2 billion, plus unknown amounts for deferred pay for executives of Bear Stearns and Washington Mutual. Citigroup got $25 billion of the bailout money. They owe executives $5 billion. Bank of America got $25 billion. They owe their executives $13 billion. So let me see. They might as well round that off to 12. Another 8, that's 20, 25, 35. There's $38 billion right there of this bailout money that's being used to pay off executives from deferred pay that's owed to them. $38 billion. How do we get so stupid for allowing things like this to happen? How does that happen? Wow. And I see Merrill Lynch and Company and Morgan Stanley responding to their evaporating profits and the public ire over Wall Street's culpability for the credit crisis won't pay bonuses this year to their chief executives or certain other top officials. Now, doesn't that sound nice? They're not going to pay bonuses this year. But these guys have this $38 billion owed to them from the past, and of course they'll get that. But Merrill Chairman and Chief Executive John Thain, you talk about having balls. Merrill Chairman and Chief Executive John Thain had recently suggested to directors that he get a 2008 bonus of as much as $10 million, and at one time had been lobbying for a larger number. So the compensation committee met for several hours to discuss the issue, and some people familiar with the matter say Mr. Thain was initially resistant to the suggestion of not getting the money. Anyway, they say he's not going to get the money now, or significantly less. And his argument was, yes, I know we lost a hell of a lot of money last year, but we would have lost a lot more had it not been for me and my good works. Yes. And I'm happy to report on one of these companies, at least, Bank of America. Yesterday, as we were having the interview, the Republic Windows and Doors factory that closed last week, Bank of America extended their financing so that they could pay these people what they're owed. That's tentative right now. But they had sent a letter to Republic, the Republic Windows and Doors, offering to provide a limited amount of additional loans to resolve the employee claims. Well, thank God for somebody getting the justice. We'll update you on that when these people actually get the checks in their hand. Bird in the hand and all that. Good to see somebody get some justice. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to have noted lawyer, attorney Michael Ratner on to talk about possibly prosecuting the people in the Bush administration responsible for torture. I would love to see that. I know a lot of you would as well. We'll see if it ever does happen. But he wants to talk about that. And I look forward to talking about it. We've had Michael on before. Michael's one of the top attorneys in the country. Did you see that Joe the Plumber now? Joe the Plumber is making... He's back at it. Is this guy a moron or not? Why they made an example of him is beyond me. Couldn't they have picked somebody with a upstanding character and somebody that knew how to talk? And somebody that could come up with a logical, cogent argument or an idea about something. Couldn't they have found somebody like that instead of going out and finding this moron from Northwest Ohio near Toledo? He really cut loose on McCain now. This is McCain's boy here, Joe Wurzelbacher. He's McCain's boy. And by the way, I see McCain and Lindsey Graham and Lieberman are still out running around together. Three musketeers. Three senators or whatever. They're out over in the Orient someplace now on our buck, just riding around on a fancy jet airplane, having a good old time on our dollar, trying to spread good cheer and American goodwill. I'd better have somebody else doing it. Anyway, this Wurzelbacher told Glenn Beck, another one of my favorites, that he felt dirty. He felt dirty. Now, he says it, after being on the campaign trail and seeing some of the things that take place. He was recalling a conversation he had with McCain about the $700 billion financial industry bailout in September. And Wurzelbacher said, when I was on the bus with him, this is a quote from Joe the Plumber, when I was on the boat with him, the bus with him, I asked him a lot of questions about the bailout because most Americans did not want that to happen. I asked him some pretty direct questions. Oh, can you imagine the questions that Joe the Plumber might have had for McCain? I asked him some pretty direct questions, he continued. Some of the answers you guys are going to receive, they appalled me. Absolutely, I was angry, in fact. I wanted to get off the bus after I talked to him. And then reporters ask him, well, why didn't you leave McCain's campaign if he was appalled by the candidate? And he said, honestly, because he thought the thought of Barack Obama as president scared him even more. And while Wurzelbacher was critical of McCain during the interview, he had nothing but praise for McCain's running mate, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Isn't that great? He loves Sarah Palin, but he doesn't like McCain anymore. So I guess when the next election cycle comes around for president, we can look forward to seeing Joe the Plumber once again. I don't know about you, but I most certainly do look forward to seeing Joe the Plumber again. And he will be on the campaign trail for Sarah Palin. Now, you take those two and add their IQs together, and as the old saying goes, if you add their IQs together, the total, if it were dynamite, you wouldn't have enough to blow your nose. Because I'm not sure which one of those two is actually the smartest. Joe might be the more intelligent of the two. I'm not sure. I mean, she's better looking than he is, but I've heard him make more sense than she does a couple of times. And he doesn't seem to be mean or anything. He's just stupid. That's all. Poor Joe. I'm in a mood today. I've been calling people names today. I called Mike Gallagher ugly. Said he looked like a possum, and now here I'm calling somebody stupid. Shame on me for that anyway. 866-546-5254. Coming up in just a couple of minutes. We're going to get a hold of Michael Ratner, so hold off on your calls for just a few minutes yet. We'll get to him maybe after we have the interview. I haven't seen any. I did see where Jan Schenkowski from Illinois has come out and said she must not have been a serious candidate as contender for that Senate seat there because she said Vago didn't ask her for anything. Well, that's a good thing. I wonder, since we've come on with the show today, if there's been any more of an update about it possibly being candidate number five in that ugly recording that they had of the governor being Jesse Jackson Jr. I certainly hope that's not true. That's going to cause a lot of trouble. It's going to cause a lot of trouble. 866-546-5254. Well, I did ask you to hold off on the calls for a minute, so we will kind of at an awkward timing moment here right now. Got your Christmas shopping done? I talked to somebody else about that again today, about Christmas shopping. So I'm not doing any Christmas shopping this year. I actually had a friend one time that never did do any Christmas shopping. And he had three kids. And he never bought them anything for Christmas. And what he did was always gave them money. And he was little kids. And I thought he was probably, on the one hand, I thought that was a little bit maybe harsh. I don't know. But on the other hand, it was pretty smart. He gave him money. You're talking about kids 5, 8, 10 years old, right in there. He gave them cash every year. Because they could go out the day after Christmas and get twice as much for their money. So, yeah, he actually did that. Didn't you, Rich? Yeah. So I thought he was, on the one hand, very practical. And on the other hand, when you think of Christmas morning or Christmas evening or Christmas Eve and no presents for the kids, you think, aw. But his kids always got twice as much as everybody else because they went out and found the bargains the day after Christmas. We're going to pause for a quick break right now, and we'll get our next guest on the list and on the phone, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Take the future, even if you fail. I believe in angels, something good in everything I see. I believe in angels, when I know the time is right. Dream.
we're back here on the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us here this afternoon. We have on the phone with us right now a gentleman's been on with us a few times before, and we want to talk about Mr. Bush's administration and the torture factor that we've talked about ad nauseum on this program. Michael Ratner, noted attorney in New York. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We've talked at great length about the torture policies of the Bush administration, and I know you're of a mind that maybe we ought to just do something about it, and a lot of people in Washington don't think we should do something about it. What do you tell people, a lot of our Democratic leaders, for example, right now, saying, well, that's in the past, we got to look forward and all that?
Well, I certainly think that this administration, I mean, I'm hoping it will ban torture under this administration. It'll apply the Army Field Manual techniques to the CIA and other people, I hope. It'll shut down Guantanamo. It'll hopefully, hasn't said much about this, Obama, shut down the secret sites where torture occurs, and the extraordinary rendition problem issue where you send people to other countries for torture. That's not going to be simple. I mean, you already saw the CIA out there trying to say, well, we need to use some of these techniques, et cetera. So I'm not even, you know, comfortable that that's going to happen. But I certainly think that there needs to be a special prosecutor appointed, and if not that, some kind of a criminal investigation commission. But I prefer a special prosecutor. I don't believe it's looking back. I don't like hearing from the Democrats that's looking back. Let's go forward. It's actually looking to see how the torture program developed, who did it, who's responsible, and it's looking forward, because if we want to have, as Obama has said, an America that doesn't torture, then we have to be able to deter torture in the future. And the only way to do that, really the only way, is to make the people who were involved in the torture program really liable for what they did. And I say that because all the laws they passed, if Obama was the best in the world and passed 20 laws tomorrow prohibiting torture, prohibiting secret sites, CIA, rendition, all of that, that there's people in the next administration after that who can twist and turn laws in a million directions, as were done in this administration. And there's also the principle that what this administration did, what the Bush administration did, was they made war on law itself. They said they were above the law. So if you can have that in a presidency, you need to send the message that this will not be allowed. And it's not just about torture. If you have a situation in our country, which we've had, that the president says he's above the law, the signing statements, that he doesn't have to obey the Supreme Court, he doesn't have to obey Congress. If you have a presidency like that, it's not just in the area of torture that he's going to go off the tracks, but he'll do whatever he wants. So you just got to do something serious about what happened here.
After, what is it, 232 years now, haven't we gotten to the place with our Justice Department where we've got laws boiled down to the bottom line, where they're succinct and definite, and there's no gray areas left?
Well, you would think so, but, you know, what do you do with something like John Yoo, who says the president, while there are criminal laws against torture and against war crimes, the president, in the name of national security, can override law? What do you do with an opinion like that? I mean, it's ridiculous, it's absurd, it's unwarranted, it's criminal in my view. But you have people like that. But unless you actually say the John Hughes of the world have to face a prosecution, a criminal investigation, you're going to have somebody else with a different name in the next administration going forward.
I've always said there ought to be a little wooden building out back of the Supreme Court, just a couple of guys and a couple of really smart guys that come out and say, no, that doesn't make sense. We're going to do it this way. This is what the law actually says, and you're not going to dance around it. But unfortunately, we don't get to do that.
That's why lawyers have bad names.
Well, they do in some cases, but don't we all go run into them when we need them?
Of course.
That's for sure. Do you think there are people in Washington, in the Democratic leadership in particular, which would be the most important, of a mind to really do anything about this? You've been out and about. You've talked to the folks that matter. Is there a feeling there that of enough people that want to do anything about it?
The short answer is no. The short answer is the same answer I got in the last Congress when they had a bare majority, or a little more than that in the House, but still relatively bare majority. And I was told, well, we have an election coming up. We don't want to appear weak on terrorism. We don't really have the votes to really start something up here or make pressure on this. We're not going to do impeachment. Even very good Congress people said that, from Conyers to Nadler to others. In this period, I'm finding a little more strength. When I say no, it means that people like Pelosi, the House leader, aren't going to do it. But people like Jerry Nadler have actually put in legislation asking for appointment of a special prosecutor. And he is head of the Civil Rights Subcommittee. But on the other hand, he's not Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, people like Jerry Nadler, which are very traditional, strong liberals, aren't going to carry the day, at least not at this point, which is why I'm insisting right now. I mean, my insistence is that people should request what's needed. They should request a special prosecutor, a serious investigation of the criminality. And even if they think that's unrealistic, even if they think Obama isn't thinking about that, because since when should we be guided by what Obama or what the president is thinking? We have to be guided by what's necessary, and it's not a static political situation. There's a lot of room here for people to push their views, and I would like to see people do that.
Are there any surveys? I mean, we know Nancy said, impeachment was off the table and certain issues are off the table. Are there any surveys that you've seen showing where the American public is against this that would hold back our Democratic leadership from doing something about it?
I don't think so. I think the surveys actually came out. Now, certainly if you look at under Bush, the warrantless wire program, the torture program, and the war in Iraq, they came out, fairly positive in favor of not having us go through these kinds of lawless administrations again. And you know what it reminds me, though, it is true that, I sometimes get people to argue with me and they say, well, the American people aren't with you. They're divided on the torture issue in particular. They think we need it for our safety. And what I say to them is, well, if we're divided on the issue, first of all, it means we're probably going to do it again. But secondly, one of the most historic speeches I've heard in the last number of years was Obama's speech about race. And it was extremely moving. And I think Obama could take a platform. That's really his job, is to push the American people to take a platform and say, look at what happened in the last 7 years. While I understand there was a terrorist attack, et cetera, people appear to have gone outside the law. And because of that, and the United States has been put in jeopardy in terms of its world community, I can make up a speech, but he can do it much better than I can. And he could actually move this country on the issue of torture and on Guantanamo and detention. And that would be the speech. And at that point, you would see a real push here for a special prosecutor.
You mentioned earlier, and I would love to know if Brock is of a mind to do so. I think he is. I don't know the man. But I, from everything I've read about his stand on torture and all, I think he would be the one that would stand there and maybe say that. I'm not sure. We had a brief discussion before you came on today about yesterday afternoon and what you were involved in yesterday afternoon. Could you and it pertains to this discussion today. Could you tell us a little bit about it, please?
Yes, one of our clients, Maher Arar, is a Canadian citizen. And a number of years ago, right after, 2000 and late 2001, early 2002, he was transferring planes at Kennedy Airport to go home from a trip that he had taken to his family home, or his wife's family home. And he's transferring planes in Kennedy, and the U.S. Customs pulled him off the plane. And they claimed he was a member of Al-Qaeda or affiliated with Al-Qaeda. They kept him in detention without really any access to an attorney for 10 days in New York. And then on their little private white jets, they shipped him off to Syria, where he was kept 10 months and 10 days, or almost a year, actually, in an underground cell, that alone, 3 feet wide, 6 feet high, complete darkness, Jeez. 6 feet long, for almost a year, and was tortured with a heavy cable beaten all over his body, etc. Finally released. He's really found to be, by the Canadians, after they did a serious inquiry, completely innocent of anything, given $10 million by the Canadians for his role. His life was pretty much destroyed despite the money. That didn't make up for psychological damage. And it is what's called extraordinary rendition. That's when the U.S. sends people abroad to other countries for torture purposely. And so we had a case, an argument yesterday, the Center for Constitutional Rights in the federal court. It was an extraordinary argument before the full circuit court, 12 judges. And here we are in an American courtroom where it's acknowledged, acknowledged by even the most moderate to conservative judges on that court, that what the United States did here was take someone from Kennedy Airport and take it and send him to a place where he could be tortured without a trial, without a judge, without anything, taken to the place to be tortured. And so the question is, and these are hard questions, is to what extent are people like John Ashcroft and others who sent him over to Syria to be tortured, to what extent are they going to be liable for first an apology, which is what he wants, secondly to be taken off the terrorist list, which he's still on despite Canada saying this guy's done nothing, the U.S. knowing that, and thirdly, of course, monetary compensation.
Does the average Joe on the street that's done any traveling at all or might be an illegal immigrant from a Middle Eastern country, do they understand the gravity of this? This could happen to most anybody in those circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I think his case is clearly the one that has the most resonance for people living in the U.S. Because even one of the judges who said, what? You know, he says, I go to Italy a lot. I change planes in France. What could happen to me if that happened? Wouldn't the U.S. be going crazy if France pulled me off the plane on my way to my summer vacation in Italy and just took me to, sent me to another place to be tortured? So I think, this issue is one that should be fairly straightforward and easy for Obama to do two things. One, stop the extraordinary rendition program. And secondly, intervene in this case and say, look, let's just settle this case. This is ridiculous. I mean, the Canadians, had a six-month, a criminal inquiry where they really just eventually blamed themselves for giving the U.S. some information that was not accurate.
Makes me ashamed.
That courtroom was embarrassing yesterday to see that. I've been a lawyer, over 30 years, to see the discussion of U.S. agents on the highest level, not some low-level guy, getting together and saying, we're going to send this guy to Syria to be tortured, and him screaming, I don't want to go to Syria, I'm going to be tortured. And him having a lawyer, except that the lawyer, they wanted to get him out of there, so they did the midnight hearing. They started the hearing 9 o'clock on Sunday evening, and they called his lawyer at 4 in the afternoon on Sunday and left a message at her office, so she couldn't be there. So these guys knew what they were doing, and it is scary.
It certainly is. Michael, a quick thought on the Illinois governor situation. Is he in big trouble, or is this just something he was contemplating, didn't actually do, and hadn't fulfilled what he was talking about, or can they prosecute him anyway?
Yeah, and those facts, it's hard to say, actually. It's not as if money passed or that he had an agreement with anybody to do it. It certainly looks bad. I mean, it's from a moral and ethical point of view, it looks bad. And the question is, on what side of politics does it stand? Obviously, most of our politicians, all kinds of people give contributions in the expectation that the politician is going to do something they want them to do. It's usually not a quid pro quo, which is what's illegal. You can give a guy money in the hopeful that he'll vote your way and he knows you gave him money, but you don't ask him to vote a certain way or to do something. If there's really a quid pro quo, the guy is in trouble. Apparently, there were other allegations in addition to this one, although this one's obviously the most explosive.
Michael, thanks so much for being on the program today. Appreciate it very, very much. We hope to talk to you again in the future about this torture issue. We thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, you are listening to The Guy James Show at Michael Ratner on a fascinating subject, and one that is shameful. The conversation about what went on in that courtroom yesterday was indeed embarrassing and shameful. We'll talk more about it the next time. Hey, I don't know yet about jury duty tomorrow, whether I'm on or off, so I'll find out here in a little while, and we'll let you know. Either way, thank you so much for joining us here on The Guy James Show today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Sears, music director. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.